Hi, I'm Julie Wilkinson and I'm a Chartered Management Accountant and I'm excited to be launching the Build and Exit podcast. This podcast is for business owners and entrepreneurs who are looking to expand their business portfolio by acquisition or at some point in the future want to exit their business. We're going to bring real life stories and experiences of people who have grown by acquisition, who have exited their businesses and other areas of business such as funding and cash flows. So there'll be lots of opportunity to learn different areas of business and how you can, in the end, transition your business from a lifestyle to an asset. So look forward to seeing you soon. Hi, and welcome to the Build and Exit podcast. I'm Julie Wilkinson, and I'm the owner and founder of Wilkinson Accounting Solutions. I started the podcast off the back of the work we do in my company because I found there was a lot of SME business owners that were struggling to understand financial statements and were quite behind in exit planning in the UK. So I'm very excited today because this is our first ever three-way podcast with my lovely ladies, Judith Hamilton and Christine Nicholson. We're going to focus, so we're all quite finance orientated, which we'll go into. And what we're going to look at today is what is corporate governance and how can business owners implement it to help with a structured exit plan. So just some top levels about my guest. So Christine is an multi-award winner exit planner. She's worked on over 100 exits and everywhere ranging from 500,000 turnover to about half a billion. So lots of experience. And Judith, well, she has sort of two trades. She's a financial consultant for SME businesses, typically between half a million and 10 million, and focuses around the financial elements and corporate governance. And recently she has started, which I've had the pleasure of going to some of the networking, so I can vouch for it, Grow Her Business, which is to support female-led business owners. Am I right, Judith? Is it female? Yeah, female-led business owners in their startup and business journey. So I'm really excited to have them on the show. And I'm going to go to Christine first, if you just want to give a bit of intro about yourself, Christine.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you, Julie. I'm really pleased to be here with you and Judith. So I'm an accountant by profession. And the minute I qualified, the first thing I did was get the hell out of finance. So I've got that platform of understanding finance, but I was much more interested in the operations of business. And I cut my teeth on one of the biggest business exits that most people would have experienced and certainly that I've ever experienced. So I come at this angle of corporate governance slightly sideways, because it's not just about the finance, although frankly, the controls, as we'll discover when Judith discusses it, the controls that you have in finance are pretty much a good reflection of how you can then control the non-financial aspects of your business.
Yeah, absolutely. And Judith?
Oh, hi. Lovely to be here, Julie, and lovely to meet Christine as well. So I'm a chartered management accountant by background, and I have done a bit of operational management as well. So I was ops manager at a private health hospital. I was a faculty manager at a big university, but a good part of my corporate career was working in the NHS at deputy director of finance level. And then about 9 years ago, I left that rat race because I wanted to set up on my own to specifically help small businesses and SMEs and bring in the knowledge and experience that I developed all over those years into the SME market. So, and like Julie said, I've recently, along with my co-founder, set up Grow Her Business. So I'm very passionate about supporting women in business as well.
Yeah, and I love it. I'm a chartered management accountant by trade, so three non-boring accountants, as I like to say. And I've had the pleasure of working with Judith directly on projects. And I haven't known Christine quite as long, but we've had quite a few conversations. So there's a lot to bring to the table today. So we're going to go into four areas of corporate governance. We're going to look at process and systems, controls, cash flow management reporting, and then people, finance, and accountability, because they're sort of like the infrastructure of what we're looking at when we look around corporate governance and how you can structure the business when you sell. So Christine, I'll come to you first. What do you think is meant when we talk about process and systems? Because it can sound a bit technical, but what if we're going to help, you know, the business owner that doesn't really know anything about corporate governance, what would you say about systems and process?
So the first thing I'll say is that the words corporate and governance create this fear in many business owners' minds that they're going to have to become something that they're not, you know, or they'll be tempted to say corporate governance doesn't apply to small businesses. But actually, when you think it, corporate just means business and governance just means good practice. And I'm not going to go into financial controls, but if you look at good practice in operating a business, then usually it works around these three main C's. So the three C's are consistency, certainty, and clarity. So the systems of corporate governance are really about behaviours. So there are, you know, systems can be technology, and I'm not talking about the technological aspects of governance. I'm talking about behaviours. If we stick with the three C's, then if you've got consistent behaviour that's at the right level, so corporate governance is usually a strategic approach, then what you're doing is you're asking for yourself as the owner and the rest of your team to behave in a consistent way, set around some clear outcomes that lead to a certain, clear goals that lead to certain outcomes. And if you start operating with consistency, clarity, and certainty, it doesn't matter which aspect of the business you've got, then you will eventually develop good governance systems. And governance is only about behavior. That's ultimately all that it is behavior that is consistent with the key roles of being a business owner. And one of those key roles is staying legal. Staying legal financially, paying your taxes, reporting your accounts, etc. Or can be including risk management, health and safety, any other regulatory element that's physically within your business. So the systems can be very simple. So the approach, the behaviours can be very simple, or they can be very complex depending on the needs of your business. But mostly, if you're starting out and you think, I haven't the first idea what this is, and so how do I start exercising good governance practices in my business? I always send people to one first step, and that's a book called The New Director's Handbook. Sadly, not written by me. Wish it was. It's by a guy called Richard Winfield. And typically, governance is usually operated at a director level. And The New Director's Handbook, even if you've been a director for 20 plus years, I still find things in that book that help you run the behaviours in your business to stay legal. I just find things in that book that define what good behaviour is, what good business practice is. And it's a book that I give to all of my clients. But fundamentally, it doesn't have to be complicated. Start off being simple.
And I'll give an idea of how I see this. So I see a lot of people invest in systems. So as an example, someone might invest in a stock system, but then nobody puts the stock on. I've seen that hundreds of times, actually. And then they go, oh, the system doesn't work. And I'm like, well, the system does work. It's the process about the system. So my biggest thing is I always say to people, systems don't fix bad processes. So I always think you're better to start a simple process first to then get it, make sure you've got the process working to then bring the systems in layer. Because I think a lot of people go to the systems because it can take away actually from what they've actually got to do, which is put the process in, because often the process is harder than the system itself, in my opinion.
I couldn't agree more. And when we talk about corporate governance and I say to a business owner, what do you understand by that? They go, oh God, that means having board meetings, as in BORED, as opposed to BOARD. And I said, well, what do you think a board meeting's supposed to do? And they went, I don't know, it's just directors have to get together. I go, well, if you think that's what a board meeting is, you haven't been having any. So actually what a board meeting is fundamentally there to make decisions. So it's a facility to make decisions. It should have a clear agenda. And this is all a system of governance because it's each step in the process. So you should have a board calendar of all the things that need to happen in your business rather than having one whopping great big board meeting where you try and fix the whole world. you know, spread these things out across a calendar so that you can actually fundamentally make a difference in your business rather than spending 3 minutes chatting about something and kicking the problem down the road. So for me, systems of governance are effective. If you haven't got a system, then it doesn't matter how much you talk about governance, which is ultimately about how you control a business. If you haven't got the system, you're effectively not in control. And it's really as simple as that.
Yeah. And I think the basis of controls and governance is really to minimize the risk of error and fraud. So you're putting things in place to stop the risk of people making errors, because obviously people make mistakes. So you systemize as much as you can to stop the mistakes. And I suppose worst case scenario is fraud, because I have seen in companies where people have committed fraud, you know, like small payments here and there, like stealing, and people don't find out because they don't have the, I think the reason small businesses don't always see it is because they think, oh, it's just me. But I think, when does the time come where you've got a duty of care to your stakeholders, you know, to your employees and things? Because, you know, you're always, sometimes it can be small things and it might not cause a big problem, but I suppose you're doing it because you've got to manage the level of risk. Like, what is your biggest risk and are you actually going to manage it? You know, what would happen if it happened? And that's really, I think, why you implement it, isn't it? So that you eventually get to the point where you've got enough controls and system processes so it can reduce the risk as much as possible on the business as a whole.
I always like to think of corporate governance as checks and balances, and the balance is the controls. So, well, actually, the checks are the controls. So the separation of duties is a check. The process is actually the control. And it isn't just in finance either. It's literally mm-hmm. every department is covered by this. And it still boils down to human behavior, still boils down to behavior.
And that's an interesting topic, because then we're going to come to Judith, because we're going to have a look actually at the control. So we've got the process and systems. What do you see as the control side of things, Judith? So what, when you work with people, like, what do you think the key things are around controls for people?
So I think the controls are the embeddedness of them will come on to when we talk about people. But I think it's about people being clear about their roles, their responsibilities, what they're able to do, what they're not able to do, so what they need to escalate to their manager or director. So, for example, your spending. So there needs to be delegated levels of authority on who can order what, who can authorize payments for what amount. So have it all structured out, you know, up to £500, it can be that level of person, and above that, it needs to be. So have those levels. Then with the payment runs, they should be signed off by someone senior, checked off who we're paying, you know, is there doing those spot checks on, are there invoices behind this, who authorized that purchase, etc. Risk management is a big part of control as well, because like you said about, you know, people, potential fraud or errors. So there needs to be a risk register of, you know, what are the biggest risks to the business, identify those risks, think about how they would be dealt with if the worst happened, think about the ways that they can be mitigated so that they don't actually happen, or if they happen, they won't happen at catastrophic level. And also comes into the reporting, which I know we'll talk about in a minute as well, but reporting will flag up if you've got the right type of reporting, they will flag up where something's going wrong and give you then the opportunity in a relatively timely manner to go and fix it. So financial control on, say, setting your budgets is, you know, that in the year, that's how much you can spend on something. If then in the financial reporting, it comes up that actually you've bust the budget in month one, then that gives you the information to go and look into what's happened. It could be there was a good reason for it, but it could be that it was actually an error or a misjudgment by someone. And that gives you the opportunity then to go and fix it relatively quickly. So I think, you know, in terms of, for me, the control starts with having the right people trained up to the level they need to be trained at, they're clear on what their responsibilities are. There's reporting lines in place. They're clear on when they need to escalate something or when they're actually, it's within their authority to sign something off. And then controlling that money through good budget setting and good processes using the accounting software and all the things that are at your fingertips that will throw up if something's gone a bit wrong.
Yeah, and I think for me, one of the reasons it's good for business owners to start implementing these controls is because it can also relieve that. I find the biggest problem for business owners is they can't trust to relieve the tasks because they think if I relieve the task, it's going to go wrong, and it will go wrong, or potentially could go wrong if you don't have the control. So, you know, there's some pretty big, you know, so as an example, I use a couple of things. For example, supplier changing details. This has happened to small businesses I know of relatively large values and big businesses. So the big one's a big airline. I won't say the name. I don't know if anyone's ever heard the story. They lost 25 million because a fraudulent person sent a letter, I think it was about 25 million, to the accounts team of change of bank details. With all the cyber risks these days, it wasn't actually true. It came on their letterhead. They changed the details. They signed it off. They made the payment and it's fraudulent. They lost the money. But I've seen that happen on smaller cases. I remember when I used to work in corporate, in 1 year, I think we got 15 fraudulent letters. So a good control for that is when you get the letter, you phone back that supplier from the system number to verify the details, or WhatsApp or whatever these days, you know, what you've got to verify the details, because that just checks. And some people will go, oh, my business wouldn't happen. But it does, because I've seen it happen in small businesses, and it's still large values. It might not be as much as 25 million, but I've seen 20, 30,000 in small businesses, which is a big number for that business, isn't it? Mm. And I think your one, Judith, about the spend, the other thing I see it on a lot is like stock control. So I'll go back to the sort of system. So the sort of thing that would happen is you'd say, well, who could raise the purchase order and for what level? And then who puts that purchase order onto the system? But I think then in that process, there's then, well, what happens to the stock once it gets booked on? You know, so they would have maybe the inventory count once a year to verify that the balance on the shelf actually matches the balance on the system, because who knows, someone's not stealing it or it's not getting lost. And then throughout, and then the reporting that you talk about, normally you'd have like different reports. So you might have a wastage report or a lost stock report or something like that. So then basically all the numbers added together would be what the stock was, plus or minus all the movements, which comes back to the actual number. And these are the types of things. And in the end, these are just helping people maintain their businesses, really, because over time, lost stock and things like that can actually account for a lot of money. So we're basically saying we've got the process and systems, which is the three C's, as Christine said, and then going into the controls, which is then making sure that within those processes, you have the right level of control for the right person to conduct something, so that I suppose the owner can just eventually feel I can relieve that task.
I think the other thing I would add in, which is maybe it's a bit softer, but it's the culture that is in the organisation as well, where staff feel that they can flag up if they've made a mistake or they've spotted something. It's that they're not going to get really told off. It's that they feel, gosh, actually, I've messed up there, or they've spotted something that maybe a colleague has done. It's that culture of being able to be open and you won't be hung out to dry on it. Because I've worked in many places where people are frightened to speak. Mm. So I think control, a big part of control is about the culture you have in the organization as well.
Yeah. And although, I mean, it sounds quite scary because you're saying it's quite a negative thing, or stop error and fraud. But I think the biggest thing is just to bring people into the process. I mean, ultimately, most of these would start with budgets. You know, if you went back to the stock example, you'd probably be bringing in your warehouse managers or your stock managers or whoever it is, your operations manager or whatever, and saying, okay, what's our average wastage? And you'd be working together to go, okay, we want to only have a 3% wastage this year. I mean, that's the purpose of it. The purpose of it is to say, how can I run my business effectively? Yeah. But to do that, I suppose you have to have these, you have to have this information and reporting, because, and people have to be able to report that honestly, like you say, Judith, so that they're not then felt like they're going to get told off, but then come up with solutions that are going to stop the problem, you know, because it's a bit of a work in progress, isn't it? So, Absolutely. So then, yeah, we then start to look at, so we've sort of come into reporting, but I suppose cash flow management reporting is a really big thing, because ultimately in the end, it's the information that people get that will, you know, help them make the decision. So Christy, when you are working with these people on exit planning, I mean, what sort of information are you helping them, or do you recommend them to bring in place to help them with the governance?
So it all starts with actually just having a basic understanding of your business model and your business numbers. If you can do ABC, you can do 1, 2, 3. I hear many business owners go, oh, I don't do numbers, I'm number blind. Rubbish. If you can read and write, you can count. And it's just a matter of a mental attitude around language. So I'm going to use an example, a story as an example. One of the biggest exits that I ever did was with a client that when I went in on the first day to start supporting them, they hadn't had management accounts for months, so they didn't actually know what their numbers were. They were literally running their business from the bank account. And it just so happened that they were robbing Peter to pay Paul at any one point. They had no idea what their assets and liabilities were. And the accountant, again, coming back to the blame culture, the accountant that had been there before I stepped in was terrified of giving bad news. So when he started to get more bills in than he could pay, he hid them in a drawer. This is a sizable multi-million turnover business. And then he saw the writing on the wall, so he left. And by the time I'd opened all the envelopes, I discovered that this business was £5 million in debt. It had £1 million of stock on the shelves that anybody could have taken if they'd known what it was for. And the business leaders had no idea that they were literally about to go bankrupt. And all for not having some basic processes in place. And all for taking no account of any number other than what was currently in the bank account. Obviously, we corrected that situation, and we had a quite significant exit within 18 months. So it was a good turnaround, but it took a lot of effort. And the first effort was understanding exactly what numbers they were. So first of all, I always say cash is king. That's the thing that's going to trip your business up. Understand your cash flow. Look at where you spent the money last month. Forecast how you're going to spend it for at least, for me, for the next 12 months. Some people find that a bit aggressive, but I mean, at least for the next 3 months. And typically in more detail for the next 12 months. So if you're going to start from nothing, start from that, because then you'll start recognizing the difference between cash and profit. Profit is a measurement between two periods of time. Cash is over a period of time. It's a timing difference. And then you'll actually start. So once you can understand that your P&L and your cash profile, your cash positive cash flow is the word I'm trying to think of. Then you can start understanding your balance sheet, because nothing makes anybody's eyes glaze over if they don't understand their numbers. Then you start talking about balance sheet. And when you think about it, your balance sheet is one of the key financial controls that you have, because it'll either go into the balance sheet or it'll go into the P&L. And wherever your trading is going, it will stick out like a sore thumb if you go and investigate it. So going back to Judith's point, if you have budgets and you have those controls in place, then start measuring your performance against that. Because what's the point in having a business plan if you're not actually going to record your performance against it? And if you've never done this before, then it's going to feel a bit clunky and a bit difficult. But you've got to start somewhere, because we all started riding a bike and most of us started with stabilizers. But I'm pretty sure that most people in their 40s are not riding a bike with their stabilizers on, because they just get on and do it. They've forgotten about, you know, scrape your knees. So you've got to start somewhere, and remember, everything that you start that's new is always going to be hard. But don't let that frighten you, because the more practice you do, the easier it's going to get. And for exit and exit planning, buyers want to see that you can effectively forecast your business performance. If I do this, this is going to happen. If they can see that, they will view your business with lower levels of risk.
And probably get higher multiples as well. And I said it. And I think one of the problems, because obviously I speak to hundreds of business owners through the acquisition and this podcast, and I think the problem that I find is most people don't really look at it until there's a problem. So in your scenario, Christine, you know, that happened and they had to deal with it. you don't tend to know something until you don't, oh, well, that doesn't happen to me. Well, actually, I mean, I would say I probably have seen about 100 balance sheets a month on average. And I would say 95% don't reconcile. And there's always a minimum of 10% risk because normally, unfortunately, it's the negatives that aren't happening. It's the costs that aren't forecasted right. And it's not just big businesses. I remember once we looked at a small business and they were about 150,000 profit over 3 years. So it's about 50,000. It was quite a small business. It was only a couple of hundred grand a year. You know, so not a multi-million business. And I think we were around year four, going into year four. And we looked at the credit cards and there was £160,000 of credit card costs that hadn't gone through. So just imagine 3 years profit gone, 3 years profit gone just because, and they were still like, oh, I make money. And I think because stock and retail can be quite difficult because averagely, especially if you're launching products, you don't make any cash profit until probably, I think on average about product three, especially if you're ordering from China. But I mean, it just hadn't, all the costs were, all the products were being ordered on the credit card and they just hadn't put it through. And you know, they probably could have turned their business around to make it profitable if they had known that. And what I find interesting is people say, oh, I can't pay for advisors, but I'm like, but you could pay £8,000 of taxes that you're not due to pay, but you wouldn't pay the advisor to sort it in the first place. It's all a bit of a strange mindset, I find, but yeah. It's just because people don't know to check it. And this is why having the right advisors, which actually comes quite nicely into the next point, because we're going to look a bit of like people, teams, and sort of accountability, especially around finance. So you did speak about it a bit earlier, didn't you, Judith, on the controls? I mean, all of these things all link together, really. But what do you think when it comes to people? What should people be looking for?
Well, the foundation of it all is mapping out absolutely all of the tasks and responsibilities that the finance function need to cover. And then setting a team structure and reporting lines that cover all of those key tasks and responsibilities and have the delegated authority and the management levels that are appropriate for that business. Not all businesses need, say, for example, a deputy finance director. It might go from a finance director down to one or two finance managers. So it's looking at what level of staff is needed for the organization in question. But the first thing is get all of the tasks out. And I like using post-it notes and getting either on a wall or on A3 pieces of paper, and then structure them into individual roles. And then from that, look at what qualifications and level of experience is needed. If you're starting from scratch and you're recruiting a brand new team, that's usually an easier way to go about it, but usually you've got staff already in place. But you start off as if you were starting with a blank piece of paper. Make sure you've got all the tasks and responsibilities covered. You get them into individual roles. You look at what would an ideal candidate look like for those roles. What level of experience and qualifications do they need? And then it's either recruiting from new into those roles, or looking at people you've got and getting people into the role that suits them best, and looking for the training and development gaps that are there and having those addressed. Retaining good staff. So, and it's not always about the money. Obviously, people want a level of income, obviously, but research is out there that people look for a lot more. They're not always money driven. So it's things like the culture that you're working in, can they work from home? And of course, there's a lot of that goes on now. So what flexibility is there? What other benefits are there? Maybe there's, some shares or profit share or other things that they can get. So it's starting off with what are all the things we need to cover in the team? What would roles look like? And then getting the right people in and then keeping them. You're going to lose some people along the way. That's just the way it goes. But if you can try and keep as many good staff as you can and look at what opportunities there are for them to progress in the organization as well. When you're then looking at selling the business, a potential buyer will want to look and see that there's a good, strong finance team, amongst other people. I'm not saying that finance is the be-all and end-all of an organisation, but they'll want to see that there's a good, strong finance team in place and to do all the things that Christine has been talking about. So, and then, of course, in that then is accountability as well. So being clear with all of your staff about, you know, what they're responsible for and being held to account for delivering what their job description says they should deliver. And having, you know, having clarity for everyone. They know what the reporting lines are. They know who to escalate to if they've got an issue. Doing their performance reviews, whether that's, you know, quarterly, annually, half yearly, but their object, looking at what objectives you can set them, align them to the business objectives, you know, seeing if there's any training and development that they need or indeed that they'd want to maybe help them progress to the next level. As you can tell, I'm very passionate about the people side, but, you know, you can't, I know, like, obviously there's a lot of things you can systemize in a business, but you still need good people there. So it's very important that you recruit and retain good people.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. The two biggest things I see in exits and acquisitions is in an exit, the owner's often stepping in a lot more than they think they are fixing problems. I've seen that hundreds of times. I've seen loads of acquisitions where operations drop post-acquisition because the owner, and I'm not always saying they're not always lying, the seller's not always lying, but they just don't really know because they've never assessed it, because they're often going to market rash decisions. Oh, I've had enough of this, I'm going to sell now. You've got to do some of these things quite far in advance. But then what I also see, especially on the acquisition side, is people promoting people that don't have the skill. So because somebody's been in the business for 20 years, they'll just promote them and say, oh, they could be the managing director. But what if they don't have the skill to be the managing director? It's quite hard for an SME business to have all the right people in the first place. So the skill that those people need is really important. And I agree with you, Judith. I think especially in corporate governance, finance is a key part, because the reality, a lot of people don't see this. I mean, you see it in corporate world, but not so much in SMEs. But finance is probably one of the main departments that's touched from every decision, because every decision a business makes will either impact their time, profit or cash. So finance are always at the back end of every decision. You know, every decision they make eventually will somehow hit the bank account, hit the P&L, you know, or hit some form of management reporting that generally finance teams run. So if you don't have the finance team running those things, and that's why finance are a crucial role, because, you know, they've got the skill set and the knowledge to be able to deliver those. That's why finance, but you are right. Other skills in the company is really important as well. Because, you know, when you came to do the stock process, as an example, you would have the finance team would be guiding probably the controls, but you'd be working with the people managing the stock to talk about the realities of their systems, you know, their business size. And if you haven't got a system to do a check, then you get the next best thing, which is some form of manual control, but at least it's some control, isn't it? Some control is better than no control. So no, it's been a really good episode, because it's, I think corporate governance can be quite a boring subject. I think a lot of people, I don't even think they know what it is. So I'm hoping we've explained it. No one knows what it is really, apart from in corporate world. So I think we've explained it quite well, because ultimately all we're saying is a business has a duty of care, and they want to their stakeholders, but also themselves. You know, they're investing their time and money. They don't want to grow this business to find out 5 years down the line they're bankrupt, or they've made no profit because it's wiped out because of the credit cards. And it happens time and time again. And I think it's just a reminder to people that don't just wait until it goes wrong. I mean, ultimately, if you put these things in at the beginning, you don't feel the pain. So you maybe don't know you've done it. But that's the better way to be, is not knowing you've done it, than get to a pain point and suddenly realize, oh my God, I've got 2 years worth of work to do here to fix it. Because we've gone into businesses after acquisition and they spent £100,000 probably fixing problems that they potentially should have picked up in due diligence, or because they scraped over due diligence when they tried to do it.
Yeah, and personally, I think it should be changed to business governance, not corporate governance.
Yes.
I think the word corporate puts people off. They think, oh, well, I'm not a corporate. So I think it should be called business governance.
Right. Well, that's going to be the title. That's going to be, yeah, well, that will be the title. Business governance.
I completely agree with you. And there's some key things. The people who got you to where you are now are not necessarily the people who will take you forward. So select them carefully. And the other thing is that it is most of these things are not rocket science, but because we dress them up in fancy language, they appear more complex than they really are. And just focus on some of the key basics, but and remember, prevention is cheaper than cure. But of course, that's an invisible cost. Mm-hmm. And it's seen as a cost when actually it's an upfront investment on the future value of your business.
Well, have you got any final words, Judith?
No, it was a really interesting chat.
Yeah.
And I came up with business governance just while we were on here.
Yeah, very
it
clever.
It just appeared.
I like it. It could be the new word. Yeah. So, yeah. Oh, well, thanks.
I'm going to patent it right here, right now.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, well, thanks, ladies. It was a great chat, our first ever three-way. So, yeah, very good. And I just want to thank all the listeners. We've done so many episodes now. We've reached well over 4,000 downloads today with many more streamers. And actually, I have an exciting sponsor coming on board soon. So that's quite exciting. Yay. So if you like our channel, hit the subscribe button and I'll see you again soon. So once again, thank you so much for taking the time to listen to our podcast. I hope you found it useful. If you think there's anyone else in your network that might benefit from our podcast, then please share it with them. Either just click the link and send it to them or send it in a Facebook group or other social media channel. Don't forget to subscribe so other podcasts come to you directly as and when we launch them. So I'm really looking forward to seeing you next time. We've got some really exciting things coming up and we'll see you again soon.